Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by our sponsors, Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, Saving the Lives of America's Heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the Great Florida Fire School, and the North Florida Fire Expo. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5 Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Well, we're back. We are back. This is Steve Green, the creator and host of 5 Alarm Task Force. We've been away for over a month due to some severe computer problems. We are making our way back. We're not all the way there, but we're glad to be back with you and bring you this podcast from our good friends of the show, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh of BraveFireLeader.com. They reached out to me in the midst of this pandemic and asked me, could we do a podcast? And we made it a Zoom podcast. So not only can you listen to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform, but if you'd like, you can go to YouTube and look for our channel there called Dalmat Prod, D-A-L-M-A-T-P-R-O-D. And you'll find the videos of three prior Zoomcasts, and you'll find this one there as well within a couple of days. But I just want to tell you how much we missed being with you. It's very difficult to be sitting at this desk day in and day out trying to figure out the computer problems, but we did it. And I'm happy to say that even though it might be a little bit different for right now, we are back and we will continue to bring you the best in podcasts for the fire service, for EMS, for law enforcement, for first responders in general, with some of the best guests in the country. Still coming up on future podcasts will be Dr. Donnie Hutchinson, who will talk about balancing life and career, especially in this time. And coming up following Dr. Hutchinson will be Chief Charles Werner, our number one tech expert in the American Fire Service today, I'd say. So we have more coming up. And we just want to let you know that we're happy to have you with us. If you're returning listeners, we're always glad to welcome you back. And if you're a new listener, hello. And we're glad to have you with us. We welcome you with open arms. If you'd like to learn about more episodes or listen to them, you can go to our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv. Just click on the podcast tab at the top of the menu, and it'll take you to our library. We have over about 160 episodes sitting there right now. Additionally, if you follow us on Facebook, you can follow us as Dalmatian Productions, and we always welcome you there, and please let us know and drop us a hello or drop us a like on the page, and we'll try to get back to you as quickly as possible. And on that platform that you may be listening to this podcast, you know, it's very important for you to leave us a good review. Why? For egos? Well, not really. It's more important that the positive reviews are made part of the algorithm that those platforms use to help people find us when they search for us on those platforms. So someone looking for 5 Alarm Task Force will have a longer search if we don't have a lot of good reviews. So it's very important, and we hope you'll help us out. Just leave a good review, a brief good review for us, and it'll be a tremendous help to us and to those who are looking to follow us and find us. And if you enjoy this podcast and you want to help out a great charity at the same time, you can share it with family and friends by visiting our little store we have with our friends from Teespring. Just go to bit.ly/Dalmat store with a capital D on David for Dalmat and a capital S on the word store. And we have several t-shirts there with different verbiage on the back. The front all have our logos and a couple of mugs with our logos on them as well. But what's important is not only do you get a little piece of the show by shopping with us, but the significant amount of the net proceeds from the sales goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And that's a big help because they do tremendous work helping the families of those firefighters who have made the ultimate sacrifice to serve their communities. And so it's a very important charity to us, and we hope you'll embrace it as warmly and care for it as much as we do. And that's it. That's our show. So we'll be right back with my guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh, right after these words. Please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography Certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Please confirm the following dates and programs on Insight Training's Facebook page before you make any reservations, as due to the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of these classes have been changed to virtual classes or have been postponed and or canceled. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's what's coming up in the near future. May 30th through Blacksburg, South Carolina, live fire training event. Insight Training instructors Thomas Anderson and Terrence Shoemate will be covering concepts of tactical thermal imaging in 8 hours hands-on training that consists of 1 half-day classroom, 1 half-day live fire training. July 20th to 25th at Firehouse Expo in Nashville. Insight Training LLC will be hosting numerous classes at Firehouse Expo. We will offer 2 hot classes on July 20th through the 22nd and 3 general conference classes with instructors Andy Starnes, Thomas Anderson, and Joey Baxa. We will also be at roundtable discussions on Friday, July 24th. Registration information can be found here at https://express, spelled xpress.xpresreg.net/register/fire0720/start.asp. August 15th, Amboy, Illinois, instructor Andy Starnes and John Schott of Max Firebox will offer an 8-hour Max Firebox thermal imaging training course at the Amboy Fire and Extrication Conference. These and more are waiting for you. Remember, please check and verify these dates and programs on the Insight Training Facebook page. And remember, Insight Training, your best bet for TIC training for the fire service. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using The Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Five Alum Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be with you once again. We're happy to have you. My guests today are going to be Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. They have been with us before. They bring some great perspective to lots of the things we talk about for the fire service, especially leadership and growing leadership. Some people often feel that, well, I'm not a leader. Well, they're the ones who can help you reach that point if that's your goal. And by the way, let me just let you know right off the bat, their website is www.bravefireleader.com. And you can find their bios there and all about the services they offer. And we're going to really kind of jump right into things. So I am happy to welcome our guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. They are, as I said, they've been on the show before, but they bring a really fresh perspective to the concept of leadership. And especially for people who think, well, I may not have what it takes to be a leader. Sometimes, I've always said that sometimes a leader has to be treated like a seed that we plant. We put a little seed in some dirt, and we make sure it has the nutrients in the water, and we watch it grow, and it buds. And suddenly, you have that little green stem, and then you take care of it more. And I think we can cultivate leaders if we're good leaders ourselves, who will come up behind us and take over when we're gone. So, Kelly and Chief, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show again. Thank you for reaching out to me with this idea of talking amongst this crazy upside down world that we're living in now. You know, we're a lot of people are in a panic. We don't know what's happening. The citizens are listening this, that, another thing, this opinion, that opinion. And they're hearing one doctor say this and another doctor say that. And of course, caught in the middle are our first responders, all of our first responders, from our dispatches to our firefighters, police, EMS people, our road rangers, our recovery operators. We're all caught in this tumultuous time that we've never faced before. We haven't seen it in 100 years. God willing, we won't see it for another 100, but somehow I don't think we're going to get that kind of latitude. But so in this crazy time, what do we suggest? How do we tell people, especially our people, our families, the first responder families, what do we tell them? How do they act and how do they react?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us back, Steve.
My pleasure.
Kelly and I always enjoy our discussions with you. And this is a difficult time for leaders right now. This is a period of time when leaders are under an unbelievable amount of stress, particularly leaders in the emergency services and medical fields who are trying to adapt to a changing environment, a changing service demand. And it's difficult. And one of the things Kelly and I kind of tongue-in-cheek like to say is, in a crisis, how do you know you're in a crisis as a leader? Well, you know you're in a crisis when everybody's looking at you and they're not making any suggestions. Because when things are more routine and they're just the usual, everybody has an idea about how we ought to do something. But when folks recognize that it's really bad, they look to their leaders and they want direction. They don't know what to do. They expect that the leader will be able to guide them through it. And so that's as a leader, that's how you know. And I've actually seen that in practice during hurricane recovery and stuff where people aren't making suggestions. They're just looking at the leader like, what do we do now, boss? So it's a difficult time. You know, and one of the things we would say to a leader is, don't make it worse. Don't knee-jerk reaction. Don't don't make assumptions and do things that you can't back away from or change. Tough time for leaders, difficult time for leaders, a lot of stress, and a lot of unknown, dealing with unknowns. Difficult to get good information, difficult to understand where this is leading to. For our fire chiefs, police chiefs, EMS chiefs, medical directors, public health directors, they're the leaders we're looking to right now, and they are under a tremendous amount of pressure to try and get this right and understand where they need to guide us to.
Right, right. So with that said, let's take a look at some of the problems and how we can deal with it. First of all, this is no time where this is no business as usual. That's out the window. That's gone. So what do we do with our business models or our operating models that we normally have used when we're suddenly faced with something that we've never even thought about or prepared for, but we have to do it on the fly? So how does a good leader do that?
Kelly, you want to take that one?
Why don't you start with that?
Well, one of the things we have to expect from leaders is they have to be willing to adapt. It's a different world right now. Business is not what it was in 2019 for most of our services. Whatever service model that you used in 2019 to deliver services, be it fire, EMS, public health, whatever, those models aren't working right now. So you've got to be willing to change. You've got to be willing to adapt your organization to that change. When we see something like this, where the environment, the very ground that we stand on is changing, the service demands are changing, the circumstances are changing, there are two outcomes for an organization. An organization that can adapt and come up with new models and new approaches, they survive and they do well. Those organizations that can adapt, that don't come up with a new service delivery model, a new way to deal with this changing environment and circumstances, they're going to fail. In emergency services, we don't have the luxury of failure. We can't have a fire sale and close up shop and go home. We can't file bankruptcy and liquidate and say it's over with. We've still got to provide services. So the leadership demands to adapt are great. And there's some neat, I don't want to say neat, that's a bad word. There are some unique examples, of organizations that can adapt and those that don't, and what happens to them. And this is right out of some of our leadership programs that Kelly and I teach. Kelly, you want to explain what happens to organizations that can't adapt?
Well, it's kind of, or you might not cease to, you might cease to exist if organizations aren't really listening to their customers, seeing what they can get ahead on. Leadership in, across the board, it doesn't matter if it's private sector, public sector. An example Dan and I use when we teach is the example of Blockbuster video stores. And you might not think that relates to what you do, but stay with us for a minute. So Blockbuster videos, I don't know when the last time you were at a Blockbuster video, I'm not even sure how long they've been gone, quite a while. And, but there used to be one on every corner and everyone went and got their videos. And Blockbuster made the primary amount of their money on late fees. So they had, I don't remember the number now, but it was like $800 million a year was coming in late fees across the country. And so the gentleman who ultimately invented Netflix had gotten Titanic for his family and returned it a couple days late and whatever. It turned out to be a $40 charge. And he was like, it's got to be a better way, right? So he developed I often ask, well, what happened? And people say, well, streaming, you know, that's why Blockbuster went away. That's not why Blockbuster went away. Blockbuster went away because the Netflix developer didn't want to do it that way, came up with a way to house, you know, warehouse and mail DVDs back and forth. And that became the model, the new model. And it was $7 a month or something. And it was not ever going to be more than that. You could use as many or as little as you wanted. And people loved it and they shifted. And so when they shifted, the Netflix folks were like, they went back to Blockbuster and said, you know, do you want to buy this back? This is a successful model. And they said, not really, you know, we're good. Thanks. And that was, you know, obviously a tragic mistake. They tried a hybrid model way late in the game, but at that point, everyone had moved over to Netflix.
Too late.
And that came after, and so now we don't even need the video store anymore. But to me, that was a great example of not listening to your customers. What are they saying? And not thinking that something you're successful in is ever going to go away. So what does it have to do with the fire department? It has, every organization is under those same rules. It's adapting, overcoming, looking for innovations. I mean, I think the post office is kind of having a really hard time. They've talked about it running out of money this year. Who would have ever thought that we might not have a post office? We might not. And so I think fire departments have to recognize that it's our job too, to just be thinking about what else can we do differently? How can we be doing something more efficiently? And I think through this crisis we're in right now, we're seeing, Dan and I are talking to fire chiefs every day, and hearing great creative things that are coming up that people are doing. There is no business as usual now. You get a call to a nursing home. Well, everything's different now. They may not want to let you in until they take your temperature and all these things that can impact response times. So we're having to get really creative and really shift our processes and our procedures with everything we're doing so that we can serve our core mission the best.
Right.
There's a tremendous amount of innovation going on. And those fire departments that are doing that those are the leaders for our business right now. You know, we've seen on the internet and in news models and things, there's fire departments that have designated certain units for COVID response, and they've set those units up in a special way to make them easy to decon and make sure they've got the proper PPE. Departments that don't have PPE, we've seen. I saw a video the other day, a training video from Mesa Fire Department, where the primary care paramedic on a call is wearing their SCBA. You know, a year ago, who would have ever thought to wear SCBA while you're treating a patient on a medical call? I mean, that would have been considered rude and sure, over the top. And yet, they don't have sufficient N95 masks and so forth to protect their personnel. So they're adapting. They're using what they have, their SCBA. We see reducing the number of people that enter a house so forth. I saw a thing the other day from a police chief who put a thing out to their whole community saying, we apologize during this crisis, but police officers are no longer going to enter your house unless there's an emergency. They're going to ask you to step outside, talk to them, and they're going to stay 6 feet away so that there's no potential of them exposing you or you exposing them.
Sure.
Well, you know, that's a real change in service delivery and in our perceptions of how we do that. So as Kelly said, those organizations that can adapt, that can think of new business models and new procedures and using technology in different ways, that's where our success is going to be in a crisis. And leaders have to adapt, and they have to be willing to empower their personnel to adapt.
All right. Well, that's a great lead into actually the next topic I want to bring up, which is with all this change and the danger that's involved within the pandemic, we have to deal with the emotions of crisis and change, which often is the formula for fear. How do good leaders deal with that?
That is one of the biggest challenges I think that leaders are having right now. I mean, the tactical adaptations and that are evolving and that can happen. But I think to recognize that your employees, everyone on your staff is experiencing change and fear, and your communities are experiencing that, and people are at a really heightened state of anxiety. So one thing we can do about that, you know, so we want to be innovating, but quite honestly, our brain goes offline when we're in a heightened state of fear or stress, and we're not going to be innovating anything. So one thing we want to do is we want to understand how the brain works. And, you know, this is a whole emotional brain teachings that that exist out there. That's quite a lot to know. But the simple version is that, you know, we have the limbic system is our emotional brain. When we're in a very heightened state of stress, anxiety, fear, our limbic brain and how to acknowledge, you know, we need to understand that limbic brain and how to overcome it. So what are people doing? So they're fearful. They're going to react just like our primitive brain did with fight, flight, freeze. They might fold. And so you're expecting reactions from people that used to give them in a certain way, but in a crisis, all bets are off. Everything's different. So you can't just rely on your same old leadership techniques for every person because things are different. So the person you didn't really have to, you know, guide them very much. They were good on their own. They were independent. You know, that person might go into a freeze or a fold mode and they might not be able to make forward steps. You might need to coach them more. So kind of a whole bunch of things happen. So your emotional brain is on high, your primitive brain, and this primitive brain is how humans developed their survival mechanisms. So it's very deep embedded into our brain. People may act differently than usual. Someone who's normally calm may snap at you. Same with a patient. Someone who's usually independent, like I said, and competent may need step-by-step instructions because they're frozen. They say that your IQ can actually drop when you're in a high state of stress. And I think what that means is that your prefrontal cortex, it's basically like your computer went offline or went off the internet. It just can't retrieve that information anymore.
I know that feeling.
So they might forget steps for something they know very well, like the incident command system or something like that. So just kind of recognize that this is real and that people's emotions and feelings, even the fact that they have to go home and decon at home and not bring germs to their family or their kids, you know, that's very frightening for people. So there's parts of your brain that can reason, and in a crisis, there's parts of your brain that cannot. So a couple things I can think of for that would be, first of all, awareness, and that is to realize that everyone is out of normal. There is no normal right now, and we don't know what the new normal is going to look like. It certainly won't look like the old normal. The reactions people are having can really impede their thinking. So the more calm we can help them be, the more predictable we can make things, will help them have some of those ideas and innovations in a better way. Because when people are not thinking, they're not innovating. So awareness is key, understanding that you may see people in very reactive states. So what can you do? One thing would be to check in. Zig Ziglar, leadership guru, calls this the checkup from the neck up. So have a checkup from the neck up at the beginning and the end of every shift. And the checkup from the neck up can be as simple as this, or you may have a better way to do it. It's up to you. But you could have a scale from 1 to 5. You could write this out and laminate it, or you could, you know, just verbally do it, however. And 1 could be, somebody's mood could be, I'm happy despite circumstances. 2 might be, I feel balanced despite the circumstances. 3 might be, I feel anxious. 4 might be, I feel fearful and stressed. And 5 might be, I'm completely stressed out. And you might just do a check-in with your group, whoever that is, if it's a, you know, public education group or if it's your crew, whoever, and just find out where everybody is. Because things are changing dramatically, and knowing that is great help. If people are like, okay, I'm doing okay, I'm level, despite the circumstances, that's good. And they could be, the same person could be different every time they're coming to work. It just depends on what's going on. But if you have people who are 4s and 5s who are feeling really stressful and really stressed out, you know, maybe put something in place to talk to that person, to get them some resources, to find out what's going on in other areas of their life in order to bring some order to it. Out of chaos comes order, always. But the more we can guide it to getting to a more orderly place and help people feel cared for, that's really going to take them a long way. And then a third strategy I would say would be just to help reframe. So we can rewire our brain. That's the good news. And that instead of, you know, people are all in this coffee and complaining moment of, isn't this awful? We're all going to die. You know, we could look at it and say, well, what if we said, this is challenging and we'll overcome? What if that became our new mantra? And sometimes when you start doing things like that over and over, that helps, you know, you have a rallying cry and you can address some of that fear. So those are a couple of strategies to kind of address that fearfulness, but it's really important just to recognize that it's there. And these people who are our everyday heroes are under even more stress than usual and are going to exhibit some different behaviors.
Right. You know, sometimes the public doesn't comprehend that. They just want what they need, mm-hmm. and they expect us to just be there, happy-go-lucky, and take care of it. But this is not time for anybody. This is
First responders are not robots.
Right.
They're human beings too, and they have fears and so forth, exactly. And they're put in, as some people like to say, they're the spear point for these kinds of situations. And, you know, part of what Kelly is advocating is make sure you've got good, healthy communications going on with your personnel. They want to hear from their leaders, whether it's the company officer, the battalion chief, the EMS district chief, whatever it is, up through the head of the organization, frequent, positive information, critical communications from the leaders helps with those things. And recognize what this extra stresses people are going through. I mean, I've seen news reports of people sleeping in campers outside their homes, or police officers sleeping in tents in their backyard so that they don't enter their home and expose their kids. There's a viral picture of a North Carolina firefighter going around on the internet right now kissing his toddler through the window. Kissing the glass to kiss his toddler. Notwithstanding being a firefighter, police officer, or EMS person, think about what that would feel like for anybody. That you can't embrace your toddler or your spouse, you're kissing them against a glass pane. That is a tremendous stress that's added to the professional stress we feel of doing this job. Kelly, you were going to add something?
Yeah, and I'm thinking as you're talking about the family stresses in that, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross created a model years ago based on grief, the stages of grief, and there's a great model of it that's incorporating morale and competence. The morale you have, how it's going to impact your competence. And if you think about it, as I give you the stages real quick, our whole country went through this. Like, shock was the first feeling, like, wait, what? You know, denial, well, this is probably not true, or, oh, it's probably like the flu. You know, so we had denial, frustration, recognition that things are different and we're sometimes angry about it. Now we have to stay home. You know, there's all these things that happen. Well, everybody else stays home and I have to go out in it and help people. That's not fair. I didn't sign up for that. Depression is, these are all in a row. Depression is the next one, a low mood, a lack of energy. Then experiment, initially engaging with the new situation. We talked about some of the innovations people are having to come up with. Decision, learning how to work in the new situation and feeling more positive. And then ultimately acceptance and integration. Now, I just throw that in because like with grief, any big change like this, it isn't a linear thing. You don't go from step A to step Z. You might be in decision, you might be feeling good, and then you might drop right back to denial and frustration. So it's a process, and your people are going through it that you're leading, and you are also going through it as a leader. So recognize that and make sure you have your outlets and you give them theirs.
And these are well-documented and well-known human behaviors and traits that Kelly's explaining. And so from a leader standpoint, if I'm a leader, I need to know that. And I need to know that my people are going through that, because that helps me make decisions and support them appropriately based on where they are. As Kelly was saying early, doing that check-in to make sure where everybody is. And when we talk about leaders here in this circumstance, any circumstance, really, but particularly now. We're not just talking about the fire chief or the EMS chief or the medical director. We're talking about the company officer, the crew leader,
the informal leader.
Yeah, the informal leader, the team leader on an EMS unit. All of those folks share in these leadership responsibilities to look out for their personnel and for themselves. Mm-hmm. Steve, I know you've got a guest coming up in a couple of weeks that's going to talk about work-life balance.
Right.
Donnie Hutchinson. Almost nothing could be more important right now than a leader understanding how that work-life balance is important for people who are in these high-stress roles right now.
Right.
I saw a meme this morning and it on social media, and it showed a phone battery charge being really low, and it says you wouldn't let your phone battery go dead, like don't let yourself. And it had a person with a little red. We burn ourselves out. First responders most certainly are burning themselves out in their role, and we can't let them, you know, collapse.
Oh, right. So that brings us then to the next problem, a situation to discuss, which is the need in this kind of a very fluid situation in which we're in, the need to implement new assumptions and procedures to deal with different or unusual demands and environments. How do we, I mean, this is not something that, oh, well, we have a few days to get ready for and prepare. This is here, now, and constant.
Yeah, and it came on us quick.
Exactly.
Absolutely. We're operating in a different environment now. You know, I hear people say, man, I want to get back to normal. There is no getting back to normal. Even as this pandemic winds down and we get back to a more healthy population and we put this kind of behind us, the world will be different. Procedures that we've relied on for years maybe are going to be different. Service demands are going to be different. Expectations from the public are going to be different. What we're asking of our personnel are going to be different. So leaders need to look at this and understand that the assumptions, the procedures, the methodologies, even the technology in some cases, that we have relied on for the last few years to deliver emergency services, medical services, public information, all of that is going to be different. And you've got to adapt. We were talking earlier offline about some of the things we've seen in fire departments that they're adapting to, changing shift schedules to allow people more time off and away from the exposure potential. Changing the way we set up units for response. A fire department that has designated certain rescue units as COVID units, and they've taken other equipment off of them that's not necessary, and they've set those units up to make them easy to decon and turn over calls quickly. Fire departments that are using alternative ways of PPE, procedures that change. I was talking to a fire chief colleague in Connecticut the other day, and he was saying he's having to actually write different standard operating guidelines almost every day and put them out. And when personnel come on shift, they know they've got to review new guidelines each day of how they're going to operate that day. Well, you know, that's incredible to ask our personnel to be able to adapt that quickly. Training has to be part of this. We have to understand that we just can't change procedures, technologies, and methodologies and throw it at our people and expect them to adapt to it. There has to be a training element that's part of that. Can we train the way we always have, where we gather groups in classrooms and train? No, we can't. Kelly and I have experienced this personally. You know, we've been traveling around the country for the last 5 years delivering classes to groups of 30, 40, 50 people at a time. Well, that's not social distancing. So now we have to adapt. We've got to deliver our programs online or through a cohort system where personnel go through it as a group, go through the training and the leadership training, but they're doing it online and we're doing it live using things like you're using, Zoom and so forth. So we're having
it together and apart at the same time.
Yeah. So we're having to adapt to new training methodologies. I suspect fire departments have to do that as well. you know, they're going to be doing training with Zoom, so that people in every fire station are looking at a training program or getting trained, but they're not going out to the training division to do it. They're doing it right in their fire station in a small group with support electronically from the training division or from the fire chief or whoever.
And there's, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say that, you know, the creativity may evolve also from, you know, we might have a squeeze in budgets next year. We probably will. There's, you know, things like that. And so, you know, I worked with someone years ago and he used to say, you know, I basically could design a station. He said, I don't need creativity to design a $5 million station. That's easy. I need creativity to refurbish a with a $100,000 budget, a current one. So it's that kind of thinking that, you know, yeah, if everything's unlimited, it's easy to do. If it isn't, you know, how do we still keep the most important things in place and do it differently? Right. You know, even just online training, like he's talking, well, that saves travel and backfilling and things like that. So just being looking for new ways to do old things or to do new things.
Right.
Yeah. And some of the fire chiefs that Kelly and I have been talking to recently, they already know they're looking at 10, 15, 20% budget cuts for next year already because of what's happening with COVID and the demands on the system and the personnel and all. I can tell you as a former fire chief who had to occasionally endure cuts of 5 or 6%, how painful that was. You know, a 20% cut, there's just not that much space in a fire department budget to, right, to take a 20% cut without talking about positions, staffing, apparatus, those types of things. Well, we got enough stress with COVID. Now we're going to throw in and say to the fire chief, next year you got 15 or 20% less resources. Deal with it.
Right.
Where are we going to end up? How are we going to deliver our services? We not only need to be innovative and look at how we're dealing with this demand right now, we need to be thinking down the road where we go from here.
Very true.
Kelly and I were talking to Dennis Compton, the president of the National Fallen Firefighters Association and also the former fire chief in Mesa the other day. And Dennis said, from his perspective, fire chiefs need to be thinking about 2 years out, not 6 or 9 months out of where are we going to be as this winds down. He's saying that we're going to be feeling the effects and dealing with the change of this for 2 to 3 years. Well, that's pretty significant to ask, where are we going to be? And right. I'm not sure anybody has those answers.
No. And as we also mentioned off air, that we go to our good friend, Chief Dennis Rubin, and say, hey, when you were at that Wingspread 6 conference in Wisconsin a couple of years ago, did anybody talk about pandemics? And I don't think it came up there.
Stephen, I've got a copy of the
report. You know it didn't.
The word is not in there.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break here.
It will be in Wingspread 7.
Oh, I'm gearing up for that already. I'm glad I have my connection with Chief Rubin for so many years. He's been such a strong supporter of the show, and I really appreciate it for him. But he, after it was published, he shared it with me, and it was fascinating reading. If I can tell every firefighter out there, if you've never had the chance to read a Wingspread report, and remember, they're only every 10 years,
right?
Which might need change after this. And maybe we have to bring it down to maybe 5 years based on what you just said, Chief, that Chief Compton said we can only maybe look look 2 or 3 years ahead. So maybe a Wingspread 5-year conference might be a mini conference, for lack of a
better. Yeah, and based on what's happened, we may need a Wingspread next year.
That's a good point. That's very true. So we're going to be back with our guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a couple of really important topics, especially for today. And that's rumors and misinformation or disinformation and unclear direction. So we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned.
The tone sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair head to the engine and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lane, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but you just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take in a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better. When you get back to the barn, you throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners. But as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey guys, you call out, I'm not feeling. And your voice trails off. Your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you are a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, the NVFC, or the IAFC-SHS website. You're ready to call it a night. The kids are tucked in, the lights are out, and the dog's in the den. Seems all is calm. But stop. It's not all right. To keep you and your family safe in the event of a fire, we're advising you to close before you doze. Close your bedroom doors when you go to sleep. Why? Because closed doors dramatically decrease heat and carbon monoxide levels, which provide trapped occupants more time for help to arrive. And closed doors can slow the spread of the fire, increase oxygen levels, and decrease temperatures dramatically. You've invested in smoke and carbon monoxide alarms. You've practiced fire escape plans with your family. Now learn another important way to protect all of you. Close before you doze. Also remember, if you are able to escape, make sure the last one out closes the main door. Remember, close before you doze. This message is brought to you by the UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute, closebeforeyoudoze.org, your local fire department, and this podcaster. And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green, and with me today are two wonderful returning guests, great supporters of the show, and that is Chief Dan Jones, the former chief in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And we probably said that at the beginning, but most of you don't know, Chapel Hill is kind of like the home of UNC Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So it's a very big campus.
Go Heels.
I'm sorry?
Go Heels.
Go Heels, right. And big campus, yeah, big area that he protected as chief, and his associate, Kelly Walsh. And they both they work together around the country giving classes when they could give classes in person with real audiences. They gave classes on leadership and building leadership and what it takes, how you can become a leader. You're not everyone's born a leader necessarily, but I believe leaders can be cultivated. And they give these great classes, but they also teach as they're teaching with us today. And that is, we're living in an upside down world. What do we do about it? And how do we, as the professionals that people are looking to, non-political people that the populace are looking to, how do we deal with this? Not just for them. How do we deal with it on our own side? As leaders or as participants, as firefighters, whether you're a snot-nosed
belly crawling nose nozzle jockey like I used to be, or your line officer, or your chief officer, or battalion chief, or higher, or chief of department. This is not the world we had on December 1st. Not the world we looked for in 2020, what it was going to bring us. We're totally different time. So in this segment, we're going to talk with them about first, probably, actually, for those of us, many of us have decided not to watch the news anymore because we don't know, is the news right? Is it wrong? This is one side, this is the other. So what do we do in this? You know, we've talked about misinformation, disinformation in public life for a long time. This is not a new topic, but in this day of our upside down world with the pandemic, how do we deal with rumors and both misinformation and disinformation? Because those two both exist today.
Kelly, you want to start with this?
Yeah, so, you know, I worked for 10 years as the human resources business partner to the Mesa Fire Department. Not that fire departments, yours probably doesn't have any rumor mill issues, but a lot of departments have a lot of rumor driven things that are happening. And I worked in private sector for 10 years as well, or more than 10 years. And so this is just a really common organizational thing to have rumors flying all the time anyway. So then add to it, you know, a pandemic and fear, and people are getting concerned and people are getting bits of news from different places. So it's just something that's been happening and is going to happen, you know, on steroids right now while everything's so upside down. So what's more critical than ever is having a really clear communication plan. So Dan and I talk a lot about communication in our training, and there's two kinds of communication. There's interpersonal, so that's how we speak to each other, a very important topic, but I'm going to focus a little bit here on organizational communication, because if it's handled well, you're going to be the rumor mill, and you're going to squash some of the rumors that are happening out in your field. Having a communication plan, and actually my last two blogs on our bravefireleader.com blog address this issue and have two tools in there that are free downloads that you can use as models for this. Good leaders recognize that a lot of information comes through informal channels. So the more predictable the communications can be and the content and the flow of communication is good, the more you're going to reduce the people's reliance on the rumor mill. And a great exercise is to kind of look and say, well, what are we doing in our fire department? Is it, you know, do we have, what kind of staff meetings do we have? What kind of newsletters, information go out in our email? And then during a crisis, you might need to tighten those up and have them more often. But if you have those tight, predictable communication methods, people are going to learn to rely on them and go to that for their primary information.
Right.
I feel like I need to keep calling somebody who I know is in the know and has a buddy who knows somebody in leadership to try to concoct some information or piece it together with puzzle pieces, because everybody will be getting the same information within a relatively short period of time. So really important to take a look at what kind of meetings and communication methods you're using, and then what's the intended audience for those, and then, you know, what's the medium? Okay, the tailboard conversations are for this audience and this information. And then stay consistent with that. It's going to be better for all if we can do that. So there have been studies that show that most employees have a tendency to believe their direct supervisor the most. So knowing that, you know, it's important sometimes for the leaders, the chief, to make a speech, make a statement that's important, but how that information is disseminated through the organization is critical. So we all know, we learned when we were little kids, the telephone game, how, you know, sometimes you pass a story through a bunch of people and it's not even close to what it started to be. So how do we tighten up that communication? So what you want to think about is when important information, changes in policy, procedures, things that are going to affect them today happen, that it's cascaded really well through the organization. So where, if it starts at the chief's office, how is that communicated to the next level, the assistants and the deputy chiefs? How is that communicated to the battalion chiefs and down to the company officers? And even if they hear it from a leader first, you want to make sure that everyone's hearing it from their leader as well. They're more likely to be believed. I've seen this work in really serious problems issues, big layoffs. I've seen it work where if you communicate really well and stick to those communications and keep those talking points the same, that people will actually stop a rumor monger. They'll be like, no, that didn't happen. When we had a big layoff, there were rumors that people were being marched to the door by security and sent away, and it wasn't happening. And people started correcting the rumor mill and saying, that didn't happen. I just talked to him. He was fine. And so making sure we know that. So I use the image of a chocolate fountain at a wedding. You know how you see those chocolate fountains,
yep.
Strawberries in them and things. Well, if, you know, imagine that as the way to cascade communication. The content should be solid, and it should be, we should know when the next communication is coming. So, okay, we're talking about it today. We don't have all the answers. This is who's handling it. These are the top 3 points, and here's when we'll get back to you. And get back to them, whether you know the next step or not. And keeping that communication flowing. And then making sure the person that it's flowing to really hears you and understands and gets all their questions asked so they can turn around and deliver the same information. Freelancers at a time like this, if people are freelancing in the middle and saying, well, I kind of heard this, I don't really agree with it, let me tell you what I think you should do, then you're losing your communication. So if you think about those chocolate fountains and when little kids at weddings stick their fingers in, you know, and then that reminds me of how rumors get started sometimes. You know, germs can get into the chocolate then, and as it's flowing through, somebody's saying something that isn't true, and that starts to become the story. So the more pure we can keep the communication from the top to the bottom, the less likely it's going to become toxic, going to be go into separate, you know, separate fountains or separate little divisions of flow, and we're going to be able to really give good information solidly. So a clean trip from the top to the bottom is what we want with information. And like I said, my blog has some free tools on that that I can send to you, Steve, in case.
Great.
Post them somewhere.
And again, bravefirefighter.com.
Bravefireleader.
Bravefireleader.com is their website. And I really urge you to go there. Definitely worthwhile. A lot of stuff, not just what we're talking about today with the pandemic, but leadership material is there. And they've been doing this around the country. So as an outgrowth of what we just talked about, rumors and misinformation, is the way of communication. We know that you can communicate the right way and you can communicate the wrong way, and you're not providing clear direction to the troops. And of course, to even fulfill what you said in this first part, a lot of departments depend on their PIO, the public information officer, to be the one who's that face to the public in the microphone of all the tree of microphones that grows at that newsstand. And although they may be used to it from being at big fires or major auto situations on the freeway, stuff like that, no one is used to this situation. But yet that unclear direction could almost become grievous in its repercussions. So how do we strive to make sure we deliver clear direction and not speak with a lot of hums and haws and, well, I think, and think, because once somebody pauses and say, well, I think, that you can't go off the paper. When you go off the paper, you lose your credibility, as far as I'm concerned. You have to be able to know what to say and say what you know.
You're right, Steve. And, you know, the key for leadership, and Kelly and I are 100% agreement on this. Communication is really the primary tool of leadership. And how you communicate, when you communicate, how frequently you communicate, and the substance of your communication, all of those are so important, and particularly during a crisis.
Right.
You know, unclear direction. Everyone knows on a fire ground how disastrous unclear direction can be. Absolutely disastrous. And part of the way we addressed that over the years was with the development of an incident command system. You know, the California guys came up with the first system that they developed to deal with major wildfires. And then Chief Alan Brunicini came up with, you know, the fire ground commander system, and it has evolved over the years. And now we have the incident management system. That is a system that is designed to deal with any kind of major issue. Now, we in the fire service have a tendency to look at ICS and say, well, that, we use that for fires and vehicle accidents and, you know, major incidents. But there's a skill set that we've developed with that that is critical to deal with almost anything. It's a system that is built around division of authority. It's built around communications. It's built around organization. It's built around centralization of information, but decentralization of functions and that sort of thing. And we have a tendency not to think about how to use that system to our advantage in other cases. One of the things that Kelly has taught me over the years is that in the private sector, they would kill if their junior executives, plant managers, supervisors, vice presidents, corporate vice presidents, division heads could function like we train fire officers to function. You know, we have a system where we can respond to an almost unknown situation with questionable data, information, and so forth, devise a plan, evaluate what we're looking at and facing, devise a plan, start to implement it, have a communication system in place, different functions of different people arriving, sometimes from even different organizations, different fire departments, law enforcement, EMS, and yet they understand the role they're gonna undertake, and this whole thing functions to solve the issue or to mitigate a situation. We apply it in situations like hurricanes and earthquakes and special events, football games. There's my fire department and other fire departments use incident management system to manage special events, street fairs, major concerts and festivals and so forth. Okay, so we have this system and we have everybody trained in this system. We're facing a new crisis, coronavirus, COVID-19. Let's think about how we use our incident management system to deal with this. There's different elements to this that we've got to adjust our response procedures, our methodologies. We've got to address our supply chain so that we have proper PPE and equipment to deal with this. We have to make sure that we've communicated to our staff and our personnel the changing procedures and so forth that are going on, what the overall strategy is going to be. That's the incident management system. We have this skill set that we sometimes don't use. It could address unclear direction, because we all understand the incident management system. And once we have a incident management plan in place, we've got a strategy. There are tactics to carry out that strategy. We've got an example that we use in our class. It's based on a real life experience that I had in Chapel Hill years ago, where we had a section of the town where the neighboring community of Carborough was planning a road project. Chapel Hill was planning a road project. The university was planning a road project, and North Carolina State DOT was planning a road project, all of these in the same centralized region. It was going to create a commuter nightmare. And in a university town, anybody who's ever worked in a university town understands this, you try to do that kind of work in the summertime when your population's lower, the kids aren't there, right, traffic's a little lighter. So this was planned for summer. It was going to be a nightmare. It was going to disrupt the major commuter routes. It was going to just be tremendous. City manager came to me and he said, that incident management model you guys use for football games and street fairs and stuff, he said, could that be used to manage this? And I said, yeah, I suppose it could. He said, why don't you assign one of your chief officers to set this up and coordinate it? So I assigned a deputy chief to it, and he created an incident management plan. He pulled all the different agencies together, the Public Works agencies, the DOT, law enforcement, traffic management, the PIOs, and they developed this plan and began to coordinate. They met every morning with a status report, they coordinated the work so that if one street was blocked, a neighboring street wasn't blocked at the same time. They coordinated the delivery of things like asphalt and so forth so that they weren't tying up a particular area. And the deputy chief coordinated all of this. Now, you tell me what a deputy fire chief knows about road construction. Not a damn thing.
Right.
But he knows how to manage a situation with different elements and different needs and different service demands and so forth. And they coordinated this, and over a period of 4 months, they completed the projects with minimal disruption. Every morning, early in the morning, they were putting out updates for the news media for traffic flow and patterns and routes so that people who were commuting knew how to get through this mess or get around it, because it was changing dynamically. And so he was able to do that. We can do the same thing. We use this skill set. And so we would encourage leaders to think about, as you're dealing with the changing environment in your community, the changing demands that coronavirus has placed on our EMS, on fire rescue, on our medical services, if a community put in place an emergency, an incident management plan, and coordinated all of these various agencies together that have to work, the hospitals, public health, fire, EMS, law enforcement, pull them all together and coordinate the effort, make sure the information that goes out is valid, make sure the employees of those response and service agencies know what the plan is, communicate it regularly to the public, we can get through this. We can eliminate, or maybe not completely, but certainly reduce unclear direction to people. We can eliminate some fears. We can help people understand what's going on, why decisions are being made, and use this system. And as Kelly said, the private sector would kill for this skill set. So here we have a great opportunity. Let's look at it that way. This is a great opportunity to demonstrate this skill set that emergency services has that can be applied in a community wide, or even a region, to set direction, manage resources, change methodologies and procedures, address public expectations, the whole nine yards that we can accomplish with an emergency management system.
You know, that's really a great example of the road work, because I don't think any driver really has given any thought of how that those sort of things are set up, other than why am I sitting here in traffic? That's all they can consider.
Right.
They don't think about the work and why do I have to take this detour? Well, this detour, if you play it out, is going to let you get to your destination within probably 5 minutes of your wanted arrival time, as opposed to 25 minutes after your wanted arrival time, because we organize it just for that case to help you get from point A to point B as quickly as possible, and yet let the work be done at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, the public frequently doesn't care how it's done.
Right.
You know, they want to feel safe. They want to feel that the agencies are doing the right things to look out for them. They want it to be efficient. Look at the major complaints that are going on right now about COVID testing.
Right.
How do we get testing? Where can we get testing? Are there enough tests? And there's a joke going around on the internet about, if you really want to make COVID testing efficient, give it to the people at Chick-fil-A, because they've adapted their delivery system to be so fast. I mean, you can go through a drive-thru at a Chick-fil-A quicker than you can go through drive-thru anywhere in the country of other service providers.
Right.
Well, there's a good example of a company that has adapted a system to make it easier for their customers and to make people feel better about it, which is what Kelly was talking about earlier, about, you know, meeting the needs of our customers, our service delivery clients, as Chief Brunicini used to say, keeping Mrs. Smith happy.
Right. Keep this. Our job is to take care of Mrs. Smith on her worst possible day, if that day is her kitten is up a tree.
And a lot of people are having bad days right now. So, So that's our mission, is to help people through this. And, exactly. and we have a system that we could use to do that.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break here, folks. And when we come back, we're going to wrap this up. I would like to say with a nice little bow, but because if you're listening to this, you're either well involved as emergency service provider or connector, or somebody brought you into this, or you might be a civilian, a buff who likes to follow fire stuff, but you've been in toss and turmoil in this time too. And in our final segment, we're going to talk about how do we get back to some level of normal, both our service providers, in this particular case, our emergency service providers, and us as people, because they're every one of them, every one of your firefighters, paramedics, law enforcement officers, dispatchers, recovery tow operators, road rangers, medical directors, nurses, doctors, therapists, everybody, they don't live alone in this world. They're all with other family and friends. How do we deal with that as we try to get back to normal? So we'll be right back with my guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh, right after these words. Please stay tuned. Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied you or teased you? Where did you most often turn to? Like many of us, you turned to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems, but there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks like family illness, money, and job problems, and more. So where do we turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station house. You spend a lot of time with them, don't you? And most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy of your house of worship. But don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. This message is brought to you by this podcaster. He's been there and done it. If you have nowhere to turn and need help now, text BADGE to 741-741. That's BADGE to 741-741.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
And we're back with this episode of 5LM Task Force and my guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh. And we've been talking about the concept of problems and ways of looking at solutions in this upside down world that we're living in now with the coronavirus pandemic. And now we're going to kind of close it up and we're going to talk about the idea of, okay, things are getting better. We're flattening the curve. We're beginning to open up slowly spots and not thinking we're going to flick a light switch because the last thing any of us want would be a spike because we've opened too soon and put all that pressure back on our emergency services and our medical people. None of us want that. So we're going to talk about how do we get back to some sort of normal. And Kelly, we'll start with you on this one.
Dan and I have a class in our crisis management, and you know, people really need a go forward plan. People need a go forward plan. People need to, they want to know what's coming, what to expect, when will this be over, those sorts of things. It's not necessarily possible, but Dan and his colleagues, you know, down in Florida, when they were working through a lot of disasters and hurricanes and a lot of big unknowns, kind of came up with a list. So Dan, why don't you just dive into your list? They came up with a great list that was very thorough. Maybe pull a couple of those items and
suggest
those for what the steps forward are.
Yeah, this was a list that was put together following a series of disasters in Florida, that everything from a tornado hitting an elementary school to the Skyway Bridge falling. There was a variety of disasters that occurred over a period of just a few short years. Originally, the Coast Guard commander of Coast Guard Base St. Pete and the local chaplain of and participant, he was a key member of the critical incident stress debriefings teams. They started talking about what could we learn from all of this, and then they included me as a representative of the response first responders to talk with them. And we developed a set of rules, basically, that you can learn from this. And on our website and our blog section, I recently renewed this and put this up that Kelly's referring to. So people can go to our website, bravefireleader.com, and the blogs and find this Rules of Crisis Management. But several of them that really strike me as are going to be key for this is we have to ensure that we're still addressing the routine. Yeah, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Yes, it's putting a tremendous demand on our first responders and our medical system. But guess what? We're still having problems like, you know, somebody's building catches on fire, or we've got routine calls like a, you know, false alarm created by a malfunctioning alarm system, or a carbon monoxide detector that's going off, or you know, somebody sees some kind of strange material in the local pond or creek and it has to be investigated. We've still got this demand on us for routine services. And that's continuing. And we've seen a delay in some of that. Most fire departments are reporting a significant drop in call demand, mostly because people are staying home. Businesses are not operating. There's a lot less traffic on the roads. And so the chances of accidents and that type of thing is reduced. But as we come out of this, that call demand is going to increase again, and we need to be ready for it. So somebody needs to be thinking about that. We got to put somebody in charge of the routine. There's lessons to be learned from this. Another one of our rules is always, always, always pay attention and draw lessons out of any crisis or disaster that you go through. There are assumptions that we make about how things function, how things react, that changes. We're seeing that now. This is a different environment. Who would have ever thought that running on a trauma call could potentially expose you to a pandemic virus?
Right.
It's not something we ever really thought much about. But if you look at history, we have been through some of these kinds of things before, right? I was working in EMS when HIV first came to light. And I remember the fear of our paramedics at that time of exposure. There was the unknown. We didn't know what we were dealing with. Now we deal with HIV patients as a matter of routine. It's not even considered a special hazard anymore.
Right.
And the reason it's not is because we learned. We learned from that process. We applied that learning and lessons learned. And that's important. So a key thing for our leaders in all of our first responder fields and medical fields is let's learn from this pandemic. Let's pay attention. What occurred in every aspect of it? We can learn from the communication process. We've talked about all the misinformation that's out there. Why is that out there? We've not done a good job of learning how to use, manage, and respond to social media yet. Social media is probably the primary source of the misinformation in this and fear mongering. So we need to get better at dealing with that. We need to get better at explaining to the news media and to the public what we're doing and why we're doing it and how decisions are being made. We need to get better at our supply chains for things like PPE and resuscitators and ventilators types things. We get caught off guard by that. Our national stockpile wasn't sufficient and it was old in some cases. I've heard reports of PPE that arrived that was falling apart because it was so old, it had been in storage for so long. There are lessons in this to be learned. And that's one of our key rules in that is to learn from those lessons. The other thing that I would say, and Kelly and I have talked about this several times over the last month or two, is how important it is for leaders to look down the road. Where do we go from here? What's the new normal going to look like? We mentioned Chief Compton earlier and talking about this was a 2 to 3 year process. It's not a 9 month process. So as we're looking ahead, what's our new normal going to look like? Fire departments and emergency agencies and even medical agencies are going to be facing massive budget cuts next year. How do we address the lessons we've learned on things like PPE at the same time we're facing massive budget cuts? Fire departments frequently only stock things like disposable PPE for a month of supply or so at a time. Well, maybe we need to think differently about that. Maybe we need to be thinking about a 6 month supply for a fire department at a time of PPE. Decon. How do we decon our emergency units and our fire stations? I know a lot of fire departments have changed procedures now where when they come back from a call, even their street shoes are being left on the apparatus floor. They don't wear their street shoes into the living quarters of the fire station. That's a change. So there's going to be a lot of that. And leaders need to be adaptive. They need to be open-minded to these changes, and they need to be willing to apply the lessons that are learned. Kelly, what would you add to that?
I think I would just say that if they do that, they're going to be more likely to create their future versus having it created for them.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think if we take your example of the ICS and we spread it out a little bit, and we know that usually after a major incident, we do an after action report or critique.
Yes.
Sometimes we have video because we have a video crew that is there, and that gives us a lot of things that we maybe didn't see because we were the command on the D side of the structure. But something happened on the B side that we didn't know about, but the video team was there and they caught it. So in the same way, we could look at having an after action summit as things begin to get back to normal. And from that summit, just like the wing spread, really, with an after action summit and say, this is what happened to us. We all went through this together in our community, our police, we have our doctors here, our nurses here, our hospital administrators, we're all together here. Let's talk about what our problems were together. Let's see what they were. Write them down. And then after we do all that and we discuss the problems, I'm going to break for lunch. When we come back, we're going to start in another color of the board. We're going to use, how do we prevent those for the next time? How do we pre-plan, a look ahead down the road for that, using basically the same a piece of the ICS that we would do any other time. Like you said, you took it out of the fire department, you were able to apply it to a road construction situation. Why can't we take another part that we do, the after-action critique, come all together, make that discussion happen, everybody pitches in together, and then together we start thinking, okay, now for our community, how do we go about avoiding these pitfalls that we fell into this time?
Steve,
can't plan every one.
What you're describing is actually another rule in crisis management, which is always, always hold after-action critique sessions and capture those lessons learned. You said yourself earlier, we hadn't had a pandemic in 100 years.
Right.
But with the mobility of society now, is it going to be another 100 years before another pandemic, or is it going to be 50 years or 20 years? Part of the problem with something like this is a whole generation that is managing this, is leading us through this, they may be gone
right
by the time it comes around again. Capturing those lessons learned and documenting them and passing them on and implementing the changes now is critical, so that whoever faces the next pandemic doesn't start from where we started at zero.
Zero, right.
And, you know, has to learn those lessons all over again. They'll learn their own lessons because it'll be different again, but they have the foundation that we can provide by the lessons learned this time to build upon.
Right. That's a great way of looking at it. That's a great way. Well, to both of you, I say my sincere thanks. It was a great podcast. I thank you for reaching out to me to do it and agreeing to be on a Zoomcast as well with it. I think the message is clear. I think the message is concise. And I think the message is imperative that we still have a job to do. We come into this field knowing that we just can't easily abdicate our responsibilities as public servants in emergency services. Because if we do, there's very likely nobody else to fill that void behind us, especially in a crisis situation. So I think you've really walked us through the ways we need to look at what's going on today, kind of help us muddle our way past the misinformation, past the rumors, and try to stay on a straight course of real information that can best serve both us, those who serve under us, and how we serve the public. Because that's the most important thing that we do, is our service to the public. And that's what we need, is a clear way to guide us, good bright light to guide us through somewhat darker times, to help us continue that job, keep ourselves as safe as possible. And, you know, we'll actually pause for a second to remember how many of our brothers and sisters we've lost to this pandemic. So thank you. I appreciate it. Look forward to another opportunity in another few months that we get back together again. And maybe we'll be on that other side. We'll be at the sunrise side of a new tomorrow, and we'll be able to talk about that. And so I wish you all the best. Stay well, stay safe. If you're listening to the podcast, we'll be right back right after these words. But to my guests, I say thank you.
Steve, and thank you for having us.
Look forward to having you,
thank you,
having you with us soon again.
Steve, thank you for having us on. It's always good to talk to you.
Thanks for coming to me.
One last thought Kelly and I would like to share is we send our thoughts and our prayers out to our first responder colleagues, nurses, doctors, grocery store workers, supply chain workers, sanitation folks, everybody who is helping get us through this thing. Kelly and I think about you and pray for you every day.
We all do. Thank you. Take care. Stay safe.
Thanks,
Steve. Bye now.
Thank you. Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hi, this is Steve. We hope you're enjoying this show and every show that we do for you. But we also want to let you know that there are some other great podcasts that deal with the fire service and first responders. You can always listen to The Professional Volunteer with my friend Chief Brian Soller, Can Man Radio with Lieutenant Jason Liska, Flow and Vent, BAR, the Brotherhood Academy Radio with Nick Hilton and his crew up in Maine. DTFF, Down to Fight Fire, British Columbia area volunteers, and they have a great kick butt podcast. You want to listen to them, and they're a riot as well. SA Matters, Situational Awareness Matters with Dr. Rich Gasway. He's been a guest on our show and just an amazing podcast. And if you are a first responder at any level, you need to be listening to SA Matters. There's Jump Seat Radio with our good friend Captain Ryan Pennington, who has a great specialty in heavy content or hoarding type fires. There's Pin the Cue, Code 3, Do Work, Thin Red Line with a close friend, Captain John Haywick, The Fire Rescue Show, Average Jake Firefighter, and Fit to Fight Fire. These are but a few that are out there, but these are some of the ones that I listen to almost every week. Stay safe, stay well, take care.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of Five Alum Task Force. We'd like to thank our guests, Chief Dan Jones and Kelly Walsh, for joining us to discuss crisis management amidst the coronavirus pandemic. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, and the 2020 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod and dalmatprodfire. And stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog on our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.